Hello, this is Mrs. English, and I'm making a recording for you of Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. This is Book 3. Now, when the men of both sides were set in order by their leaders, the Trojans came on with clamor and shouting, like wildfowl, as when the clamor of cranes goes high to the heavens, when the cranes escape the winter time, and the rains unceasing, and clamorously wing their way to the streaming ocean, bringing to the Pygmean men bloodshed and destruction. This tells us the Greeks knew about the African Pygmies, the Pygmean men, at daybreak when they bring on the baleful battle against them. That's how the Trojans came, clattering. But the Achaean men went silently, breeding valor, stubbornly minded each in his heart to stand by the others. Line 10. As on the peaks of a mountain the south wind scatters the thick mist, no friend to the shepherd, but better than night for the robber, and a man can see before him only so far as a stone cast, so beneath their feet the dust drove up in a storm cloud of men marching, who made their way through the plain in great speed. Now, as these in their advance had come close together, Alexandrus, Paris, the godlike, leapt from the ranks of the Trojans, as challenger, wearing across his shoulders the hide of a leopard, curved bow and sword, while in his hands shaking two javelins, pointed with bronze, he challenged all the best of the Argives to fight man to man against him in bitter combat. Note, this is not standard armor. He's dressing as Heracles in the hide of a leopard. Line 21. Now as soon as Menelaus the warlike caught sight of him making his way with long strides out in front of the army, he was glad, like a lion who comes on a mighty carcass, in his hunger chancing upon the body of a horned stag or wild goat, who eats it eagerly, although against him are hastening the hounds in their speed and the stalwart young men. Thus Menelaus was happy finding godlike Alexandrus Paris there in front of his eyes, and thinking to punish the robber, straightway in all his armor he sprang to the ground from his chariot. Line 30. But Alexandrus Paris, the godlike, when he saw Menelaus showing among the champions, the heart was shaken within him. To avoid death, he shrank back into the host of his own companions. As a man who has come on a snake in a mountain valley suddenly steps back, and the shivers come over his body, and he draws back and away, cheeks seized with a Greek green pallor, so in terror of Atreus's son, Menelaus, godlike Alexandrus Paris, lost himself again in the host of the haughty Trojans. But Hector saw him, and in words of shame rebuked him. Evil Paris, beautiful woman crazing, cajoling, better had you never been born or killed unwedded. Truly I could have wished it so. It would be far better than to have you with us to our shame, for others to sneer at. Surely now the flowing-haired Achaeans laugh at us, thinking you are our bravest champion, only because your looks are handsome. But there is no strength in your heart, no courage. Were you like this that time when in the sea-wandering vessels, assembling oarsmen to help you, you sailed over the water and mixed with the outlanders and carried away a fair woman from a remote land, whose lord's kin were spearmen and fighters, to your father a big sorrow and your city and all your people, to yourself a thing shameful but bringing joy to the enemy? And now you would not stand up against warlike Menelaus? Thus would you learn of the man whose blossoming wife you have taken. The lyre would not help you then, nor the favors of Aphrodite, nor your locks when you rolled in the dust, nor all your beauty. No, but the Trojans are cowards in truth, else long before this you had worn a mantle of flying stones for the wrong you did us. It means he would have been stoned. He would have worn a coat of flying stones. Then in answer, Alexandrus Paris the godlike spoke to him. Hector, seeing you have scolded me rightly, not beyond measure, still your heart forever is weariless, like an axe blade driven by a man's strength through the timber, one who well skilled hews a piece for a ship, driven on by the force of a man's strength. Such is the heart in your breast, unshakable. Yet do not bring up against me the sweet favors of golden Aphrodite. So don't hold against me that Aphrodite favors me. I can't help that. Line 65. Never to be cast away are the gifts of the gods, magnificent, which they give of their own will. No man could have them for wanting them. Now, though, if you wish me to fight it out and do battle, make the rest of the Trojans sit down, and all the Achaeans, the Greeks, and set me in the middle with Menelaus the warlike, to fight together for the sake of Helen and all her possessions. Line 7-1. That one of us who wins and is proved stronger, let him take the possessions fairly and the woman, and lead her homeward. But the rest of you, having cut your oaths of faith and friendship, dwell, you in Troy, where the soil is rich, while the others return home to horse-pasturing Argos, Greece, and Achaea, the land of fair women. So he spoke, and Hector, hearing his word, was happy, and went into the space between and forced back the Trojan battalions, holding his spear by the middle until they were all seated. Realize, this is the battle they've come to battle one another, and Hector just made all the Trojans sit down. Line 79. But the flowing-haired Achaeans, so the Greeks had long hair, kept pointing their bows at him, with arrows and with flung stones, striving ever to strike him, until Agamemnon, lord of men, cried out in a great voice, Argives, Greeks, hold! Cast at him no longer, O sons of the Achaeans! Hector of the Shining Helm is trying to tell us something. So he spoke, and they stopped fighting, and suddenly all fell silent. But Hector between them spoke now to both sides. Hear from me, Trojans and strong-grieved Achaeans, the word of Alexandrus Paris, for whose sake this strife has arisen. He would have all the rest of the Trojans and all the Achaeans lay aside on the bountiful earth their splendid armor, while he himself in the middle, and warlike Menelaus, fight alone, for the sake of Helen and all her possessions. That one of them who wins and is proved stronger, let him take the possessions fairly and the woman, and lead her homeward, while the rest of us cut our oaths of faith and friendship. So here Hector says, just Menelaus and Paris Alexander will fight, the rest of us we can be friends. Line 95. So he spoke, and all of them stayed stricken to silence. But among them spoke out Menelaus of the great war cry, Listen now to me also, since beyond all others this sorrow comes closest to my heart, and I think the Argives, Greeks, and Trojans can go free of each other at last. You have suffered much evil for the sake of this my quarrel, since Alexandrus began it. As for that one of us too, to whom death and doom are given, let him die. The rest of you be made friends with each other. Bring two lambs, let one be white and the other black, for earth and the sun god, and for Zeus we will bring yet another. Bring, that he may seal the pledges, the strength of Priam. Line 106. Priam himself, for his sons are outrageous, not to be trusted, lest some man overstep Zeus's oath and make them be nothing. Always it is that the hearts and the younger men are frivolous, but when an elder man is among them, he looks behind him and in front, so that all comes out far better for both sides. So they want Priam himself to come to start the fight and to give the oath. Line 111. So he spoke, and the Trojans and Achaeans were joyful, hoping now to be rid of all the sorrow of warfare. They pulled their chariots into line and themselves dismounted and stripped off their armor, which was laid on the ground beside them, close together. So there was little ground left between them. Line 116. Hector sent away to the citadel two heralds lightly to bring down the lambs and to summon Priam, and powerful Agamemnon in turn sent Talthybius to go down to the hollow ships with orders to bring two lambs. He did not disobey the order of great Agamemnon. Line 121. Now to Helen of the white arms came a messenger, Iris, in the likeness of her sister-in-law, the wife of Antenor's son, whom strong Helicaon wed, the son of Antenor, Laodike, loveliest looking of all the daughters of Priam. The action has now moved to the top of the wall. We are now at Troy on the wall. Line 125. She came on Helen in the chamber. She was weaving a great web, a red folding robe, and working into it the numerous struggles of Trojans, breakers of horses, and bronze-armored Achaeans, Greeks, struggles that they endured for her sake at the hands of the war god. So the men are out fighting, and the women are weaving robes telling about the war. The men sing of the glory, the women weave the story. line 129. Iris of the swift feet stood beside her and spoke to her. Come with me, dear girl, to behold the marvelous things done by Trojans, breakers of horses, and bronze-armored Achaeans, Greeks, who just now carried sorrowful war against each other in the plain, and all their desire was for deadly fighting. Now they are all seated in silence. The fighting has ended. They lean on their shields, the tall spears struck in the ground beside them. But Menelaus the warlike and Alexandrus will fight with long spears against each other for your possession. You shall be called beloved wife of the man who wins you. Speaking so, the goddess left in her heart sweet longing after her husband of time before, and her city, and her parents. So Iris leaves Helen, and now Helen is longing for her husband Menelaus, and for Sparta, and for her parents. Line 141. And at once, wrapping herself about in shimmering garments, she went forth from the chamber, letting fall a light tear, not by herself, since two handmaidens went to attend her, Aethra, Pythias's daughter, and Clymene of the Ox Eyes. Rapidly they came to the place where the Scaean gates stood. The Scaean gates are the main gates of Troy. Now those who sat with Priam, Panthaos and Theomotes, Lampus and Clytius, Hicaeon, Scion of Ares, with Antenor and Euchelegon, both men of good counsel, these are Priam's brothers, these were seated by the Scaean gates, elders of the people. You can read about this in Book 20, beginning line 238. Line 150. Now through old age these fought no longer, yet were they excellent speakers still, and clear as cicadas who threw the forest. So how did they speak? How clear were they? Like cicadas who through the forest settle on trees to issue their delicate voices of singing. Such were they who sat on the tower, chief men of the Trojans, and these, as they saw Helen along the tower approaching, murmuring softly to each other, uttered their winged words. Line 156. The old men, looking at Helen, talking about her. Surely there is no blame on Trojans and strong grieved Achaeans if for long time they suffer hardship for a woman like this one. Terrible is the likeness of her face to immortal goddesses. Her beauty is terrible. Still, though she be such, let her go away in the ships, lest she be left behind, a grief to us and our children. So they spoke. But Priam aloud called out to Helen, Come over where I am, dear child, and sit down beside me, to look at your husband of time past, your friends, and your people. I am not blaming you. To me the gods are blameworthy. Line 165. Who drove upon me this sorrowful war against the Achaeans? So you could tell me the name of this man, who is so tremendous. Who is this Achaean man of power and stature? So they are standing on the wall, Priam and Helen, 9 years in the war, and just now he is pointing out people and saying, By the way, who is that? Line 163. Though in truth there are others taller by a head than he is, yet these eyes have never yet looked on a man so splendid nor so lordly as this. Such a man might well be royal. Helen, the shining among women, answered and spoke to him, Always to me, beloved father, you are feared and respected, and I wish bitter death had been what I wanted when I came hither following your son, forsaking my chamber, my kinsman, my grown child. She's talking about Hermione. This is her child who later is going to marry Orestes. Remember that. Line 175. My kinsman, my grown child, and the loveliness of girls my own age. It did not happen that way, and now I'm worn with weeping. This now I will tell you in answer to the question you asked me. That man is Atreus's son, Agamemnon, widely powerful, at the same time a good king and a strong spear fighter, once my kinsman, slut that I am. Did this ever happen? Line 181. This she said, and the old man spoke again, wondering at him, O son of Atreus, that's Agamemnon, blessed child of fortune and favor, many are these beneath your sway, these sons of the Achaeans. Once before this time I visited Phrygia of the vineyards. There I looked on the Phrygian men with their swarming horses, so many of them, the people of Otreus and the godlike Mygdon, whose camp was spread at that time along the banks of Sangarius. And I myself, a helper in war, was marshaled among them on that day when the Amazon women came, men's equals, This reference to Amazon women is fascinating. They will be mentioned in Book 6, beginning at line 186, and they supported the Trojans in this war. Line 190. Yet even they were not so many as these glancing-eyed Achaeans. Next again, the old man asked her, seeing Odysseus, "Tell me of this one also, dear child. What man can he be, shorter in truth by a head than Atreus' son Agamemnon, but broader, it would seem, in the chest and across the shoulders? Now, as his army lies piled on the prospering earth, still he rages, like some ram, through the marshaled ranks of the fighters. Truly, to some deep-fleeced ram would I liken him who makes his way through the great mass of the shining sheep flocks." Helen, the daughter descended of Zeus, spoke then in answer, "This one is Laertes' son, resourceful Odysseus," line 201, "who grew up in the country, rough though it be, of Ithaca, to know every manner of shiftiness and crafty counsels. In his turn, Antenor of the good council answered her, 'Surely this word you have spoken, my lady, can be no falsehood. Once in the days before now, brilliant Odysseus came here with warlike Menelaus, and their embassy was for your sake.'" So now we learn from one of the old men sitting on the Trojan wall that Odysseus and Menelaus came earlier with an embassy and tried to get her back. Line 207. "To both of these I gave in my halls kind entertainment, and I learned the natural way of both and their close counsels. Now, when these were set before the Trojans assembled and stood up, Menelaus was bigger by his broad shoulders, but Odysseus was the more lordly when both were seated. Now before all, when both of them spurned their speech and their counsels, Menelaus indeed spoke rapidly, in a few words, but exceedingly lucid, since he was no longer speaker, nor one who wasted his words, though he was only a young man. But when that other drove to his feet, resourceful Odysseus, he would just stand and stare down, eyes fixed on the ground beneath him, nor would he gesture with the staff backward and forward, but hold it clutched hard in front of him, like any man who knows nothing." Line 220. "Yes, you would call him a sullen man and a fool likewise, but when he let the great voice go from his chest and the words came drifting down like the winter snows, then no other mortal man beside could stand up against Odysseus. Then we wondered less beholding Odysseus's outward appearance." Line 225. Third in order, looking at Aias, the old man asked her, "Who then is this other Achaean of power and stature, towering above the Argives by head and broad shoulders?" Helen, with the light robes and shining among women, answered him, "That one is giant Aias, the wall of the Achaeans, and behind them is Idomeneus, like a god standing among the Cretans, and the lords of Crete are gathered about him." This is Crete, like the island of Crete normally seen with a sea. Line 232. "Many a time warlike Menelaus would entertain him in our own house when he came over from Crete, and I see them all now, all the rest of the glancing-eyed Achaeans, all whom I would know well by sight, whose names I could tell you. Yet nowhere can I see those two, the marshals of the people, Castor, breaker of horses, and the strong boxer, Pleutikes, my own brothers, born with me of a single mother." So Helen is looking among the warriors, and she does not see Castor and Pollux, Castor and Polydeuces, her brothers. "Perhaps these came not with the rest from Lake Damon, Sparta, her home, from Lake Damon the lovely, or else they did come here in their sea-wandering ships, yet now they are reluctant to go with the men into battle, dreading the words of shame and all the reproach that is on me." So she spoke, but the teeming earth lay already upon them away in Lake Damon, in Sparta, the beloved land of their fathers. So we're told in just a word here, what Helen does not know is that she does not see them because both of her brothers are dead. Line 245. "Now through the town the heralds brought the symbols of oaths pledged, two young rams and cheerful wine, the yield of the tilled land in a goatskin wine sack, while another carried the shining mixing bowl, the herald Idaeus, and the golden wine cups. Standing beside the aged man, he spoke words to arouse him. 'Son of Laomedon, rise up. You are called by the chief men of Trojans, breaker of horses and bronze-armored Achaeans, to come down into the plain that you may seal the oaths pledged. For warlike Menelaus and Alexandrus are to fight with long spears against each other for the sake of the woman.'" Line 255. "Let the woman go to the winner and all the possessions. Let the rest of them, cutting their oaths of faith and friendship, dwell. We in Troy, where the soil is rich, while those others return home to horse pasturing Argos and Achaia.
So he spoke, and the old man shuddered, but called his companions to yoke the horses to the car, and they promptly obeyed him, so they get his chariot. And Priam mounted into the car, and gathered the reins back as Antenor beside him stepped into the fair-wrought chariot. Through the Scaean gates to the plain they steered the swift horses. Now when these had come among the Trojans and Achaeans, they stepped down on the prospering earth from their cars with horses and made their way striding among the Achaeans and Trojans. On the other side rose up the lord of men, Agamemnon, and the resourceful Odysseus rose up. Meanwhile the proud heralds led up the victims for the gods' oaths, and in a great wine bowl mixed the wine and poured water over the hands of the princess. Line 271. Atreus' son laid hands upon his work knife and drew it from where it hung ever beside the mighty sheath of his war sword, and cut off hairs from the heads of the lambs, and the heralds thereafter passed these about to all the princes of the Trojans and Achaeans. Atreus' son, Agamemnon, uplifting his hands, then prayed in a great voice, "Father Zeus, watching over us from Ida, most high, most honored, and Helios, you who see all things, who listen to all things, earth and rivers, and you who under the earth take vengeance on dead men." This is referring to the Furies. You could take a note also at book 19, beginning with line 259. You'll see those who under the earth take vengeance on dead men. These are Furies. Whoever among them has sworn falsehood, you shall be witnesses. So he's calling upon the awful things to swear the oaths of fidelity and to observe this swearing and to take revenge on them if they do not obey. Or whoever among them has sworn falsehood, line 280, you shall be witnesses to guard the oaths of fidelity. If it should be that Alexandra slays Menelaus, let him keep Helen for himself and all her possessions, and we in our seafaring ships shall take our way homeward. But if the fair-haired Menelaus kills Alexandrus, Paris, then let the Trojans give back Helen and all her possessions, and pay also a price to the Argives which will be fitting, which among people yet to come shall be as a standard. Then, if Priam and the sons of Priam are yet unwilling, after Alexandrus has fallen to pay me the penalty, I myself shall fight hereafter for the sake of the ransom, here remaining until I have won to the end of my quarrel. So he spoke, and with pitiless bronze he cut the lambs' throats, letting them fall gasping again to the ground, the life breath going away, since the strength of the bronze had taken it from them. Line 295. Drawing the wine from the mixing bowls in the cups, they poured it forth and made their prayer to the gods who live everlasting, and thus would murmur any man, Achaean or Trojan, Zeus, exalted and mightiest, and you other immortals, let those, whichever side they may be, who do wrong to the oaths sworn first, let their brains be spilled on the ground as this wine is spilled now, theirs and their sons, and let their wives be the spoil of others. So Homer is telling us that as these oaths are made, both Greeks and Trojans, sitting there watching, say, whoever breaks their oath, let happen to them as is happening to these animals, and let their wives be taken away. Line 302. They spoke, but none of this would the son of Cronus accomplish. Zeus. Now among them spoke Priam, descended of Dardanus also. Listen to me, you Trojans and you strong-grieved Achaeans. Now I am going away to win the Ilion, to Troy, homeward, since I cannot look with these eyes on the sight of my dear son fighting against warlike Menelaus in single combat. So Priam came all the way down in his chariot to the battlefield and observed the sacrifices and agreed to the stipulations of the agreement. But now he's leaving, going back to the walls of Troy to actually watch this battle. Again, line 308. Zeus knows, maybe he knows, and the rest of the gods immortal, for which of the two death is appointed to end this matter. He spoke, a godlike man, and laid the lambs in the chariot and mounted into it himself and pulled the reins backward. Antenor, beside him, stepped up into the fair-wrought chariot. These two took their way backward and made for Ilion, Troy. Hector now, the son of Priam and brilliant Odysseus, measured out the distance first, and thereafter picked up two lots,
and like a dice or rocks, some type of lots, and put them in a brazen helmet, and shook them, to see which one of the two should be first to cast with his bronze spear. And the people on each side held up their hands to the gods and prayed of them. These would murmur any man, Achaean or Trojan. So again, Homer's telling us what the people are thinking as these lots are being shaken around in this bronze helmet. Thus would murmur any man, Achaean or Trojan, Father Zeus, watching over us from Ida, most high, most honored, whichever man has made what has happened happen to both sides, grant that he be killed and go down to the house of Hades. Let the friendship and the sworn faith be true for the rest of us. So they spoke, and tall Hector of the shining helm shook the lots, looking backward, and at once Paris's lot was outshaken. All the rest sat down in their ranks on the ground at the place where the glittering armor of each was piled by his light-footed horses, while one of them put about his shoulders his splendid armor, brilliant Alexandrus Paris, the lord of lovely-haired Helen. First, and this is how you put your armor on. First, he placed along his legs the fair greaves, linked with silver fastenings to hold the greaves at the ankles. Afterwards, he girt on about his chest the corslet of Lycaon, his brother, since this fitted him also. Notice that Alexander does not have a corslet. He had to borrow one from his brother, because he's an archer. Across his shoulders he slung the sword with the nails of silver, a bronze sword, and above it the great shield, huge and heavy. Line 336. Over his powerful head he set the well-fashioned helmet with the horsehair crest, and the plumes nodded terribly above it. He took up a strong shafted spear that fitted his hand's grip, in the same way warlike Menelaus put on his armor. Now when these two were armed on either side of the battle, they strode into the space between the Achaeans and Trojans, looking terror at each other, and amazement seized the beholders. Trojans, breakers of horses, and strong greaved Achaeans, they took their stand in the measured space not far from each other, raging each at the other man and shaking their spear shafts. This is line 345, and in this line, Menelaus and Alexandrus walk, you know, pace up and down, staring at each other, shaking their spears at one another. Continuing, line 346. First of the two, Alexandrus, let go his spear, far shadowing, and struck the shield of Atreus' son on its perfect circle. Nor did the bronze point break its way through, but the spearhead bent back in the strong shield. And after him, Atreus' son Menelaus was ready to let go the bronze spear with a prayer to Zeus' father. Zeus, Lord, grant me to punish the man who first did me injury, brilliant Alexandrus, and beat him down under my hand's strength, that any one of the men who come may shudder to think of doing evil to a kindly host who has given him friendship. Menelaus here has properly prayed to Zeus, who is the patron god of Xenia, which is the guest-host relationship, which is the relationship that Alexandrus has abused mightily by accepting the hospitality of a man's home and then running off with his wife. Continuing, line 355. So he spoke, and balanced the spear far-shadowed, and threw it, and struck the shield of Priam's son on its perfect circle. All the way through the glittering shield went the heavy spearhead, and smashed its way through the intricately worked corslet. Straight ahead by the flank, the spearhead shore through his tunic, yet he bent away to one side, and avoided the dark death. Drawing his sword with the silver nails, the son of Atreus, heaving backward, struck at the horn of his helmet. The sword blade, three times broken and four times broken, fell from his hand's grip. Groaning, the son of Atreus lifted his eyes to the wide sky. Father Zeus, no god beside is more baleful than you are. Here I thought to punish Alexandrus for his wickedness, and now my sword is broken in my hands, and the spear flew vainly out of my hands on the throw before, and I have not hit him. He spoke, and flashing forward, laid hold of the horse-haired helmet, and spun him about, and dragged him away toward the strong grieved Achaeans. So you understand, Alexander's spear glanced off, Menelaus' spear at Alexander broke through, almost got him. He turned in time to avoid injury. Then Menelaus attacking him with his sword breaks into pieces.
So Alexander is obviously being protected by the gods, and Menelaus is complaining. So he grabs him by, he laid hold of the horse-haired helmet. Menelaus has Alexander now by the helmet, line 370, and spun him about and dragged him away toward the strong, grieved Achaeans. For the broidered strap under the softness of his throat strangled Paris, fastened under his chin to hold on the horned helmet. So his chin strap, unless it breaks, Paris is being strangled and dragged back to the Achaeans. Now he would have dragged him away and won glory forever, had not Aphrodite, daughter of Zeus, watched sharply, line 375. She broke the chin strap, made from the hide of a slaughtered bullock, and the helmet came away empty in the hand of Atreides. The hero whirled the helmet about and sent it flying among the strong, grieved Achaeans, and his staunch companions retrieved it. So the helmet strap breaks, and Menelaus is so furious he throws it among the Greeks. He turned and made again for his man, determined to kill him with the bronze spear. But Aphrodite caught up Paris easily, since she was divine, and wrapped him in a thick mist, and set him down again in his own perfumed bedchamber. The reader, the listener must understand, Aphrodite just picked up her favorite Paris and put him back safely behind the walls of Troy, not only in Troy, in his bedchamber, with Menelaus left fuming on the battlefield looking for him. Line 383. She then went away to summon Helen, and found her on the high tower, with a cluster of Trojan women about her. She laid her hand upon the robe immortal and shook it, and spoke to her, likening herself to an aged woman, a wool dresser, who, when she was living in Lake Demone, Sparta, made beautiful things out of wool and loved her beyond all others. So this means that when the messenger comes for Helen, when Aphrodite comes for Helen, she makes herself look like an old woman from Sparta that Helen knows. Likening herself to this woman, Aphrodite spoke to her. Come with me. Alexandra sends for you to come home to him. He is in his chamber now, in the bed with its circled pattern, shining in his raiment and his own beauty. You would not think that he came from fighting against a man. You would think he was going rather to a dance, or rested and had been dancing lately. Line 395. So she spoke and troubled the spirit in Helen's bosom. So she, as she recognized the round, sweet throat of the goddess, and her desirable breasts, and her eyes that were full of shining, she wondered, and spoke a word, and called her by name thus, Strange divinity, why are you still so stubborn to beguile me? Will you carry me further yet, somewhere among cities fairly settled, in Phrygia, or in lovely Maeonia? Is there some mortal man there also who is dear to you? These are important lines because they tell us that Helen here is actually angry at Aphrodite. Aphrodite is only concerned that she promised to give Helen to Paris, and she is fulfilling her promise. She has Paris in his bedroom, and she's dragging Helen to him. And Helen is furious and says, what if some other mortal is dear to you? What if Paris someday is not your favorite? What if some other man is? Will you drag me away there and give me to that man also then? So she is duly angry. Line 403. Is it because Menelaus has beaten great Alexandrus and wishes, hateful even as I am, to carry me homeward? Is it for this that you stand in your treachery now beside me? Go yourself and sit beside him. Abandon the god's way. Turn your feet back, never again to the paths of Olympus, but stay with him forever, and suffer for him, and look after him, until he makes you his wedded wife, or makes you his slave girl. Not I. I'm not going to him. It would be too shameful. I will not serve his bed, since the Trojan women hereafter would laugh at me. All in my heart, even now, is confused with sorrows. Then, in anger, Aphrodite the Shining spoke to her. Wretched girl, do not tease me, lest in anger I forsake you and grow to hate you as much as I now terribly love you, lest I encompass you in hard hate, caught between both sides, Danaans and Trojans alike, and you wretchedly perish. So she spoke, and Helen, daughter of Zeus, was frightened, and went, shrouded herself about in the luminous spun robe, silent, unseen by the Trojan women, and led by the goddess. Line 421. When they had come to Alexandrus, splendidly wrought house, the rest of them, handmaidens, went speedily to their own work. But she, shining among women, went to the high-vaulted bedchamber.
Aphrodite, the sweetly laughing, drew up an armchair. Carrying it, she, a goddess, and set it before Alexandrus, and Helen, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, took her place there, turning her eyes away, and spoke to her lord in derision. In other words, Aphrodite made Helen come, pulled up a chair for her, set her down in it, and now Helen has to talk to Paris. "So, you came back from fighting. Oh, how I wish you had died there, beaten down by the stronger man who was once my husband. There was a time before now you boasted that you were better than warlike Menelaus, in spear and hand and your own strength. Go forth now and challenge warlike Menelaus once again to fight you in combat. But no, I advise you rather to let it be and fight no longer with fair-haired Menelaus, strength against strength in single combat recklessly. You might very well go down before his spear." Paris then in turn spoke to her thus, and answered her, "Lady, censure my heart no more in bitter reprovals. This time Menelaus with Athene's help has beaten me. Another time I shall beat him. We have gods on our side also. Come then, rather let us go to bed and turn to lovemaking. Never before as now has passion enmeshed my senses, and when I took you, as when I took you for the first time from Lake Demone, Sparta, the lovely, and caught you up and carried you away in seafaring vessels, and lay with you in the bed of love on the island Crenae. Not even then as now did I love you and sweet desire seize me." So apparently Aphrodite has given Paris especially strong desire just now. Speaking, he led the way to the bed, and his wife went with him. So these two were laid in the carven bed. But Atreides, which is Menelaus, ranged like a wild beast, and down, up and down the host, to discover whither he could find anywhere godlike Alexandrus. Yet could none of the Trojans, nor any renowned companion, show Alexandrus then to warlike Menelaus. These would not have hidden him for love, if any had seen him, since he was hated among them all as dark death is hated. So poor Menelaus is looking everywhere for Paris, and even Paris's own people, even the Trojans, would not have hidden him because they hate him. Line 455. Now among them spoke forth the lord of men, Agamemnon. "Listen to me, O Trojans, Dardanians, and companions. Clearly the victory is with warlike Menelaus. Do you therefore give back with all her possessions Helen of Argos, and pay a price that shall be befitting. Which among people yet to come shall be as a standard. So from here on out, if anyone else steals a wife, this will be the standard. They have to fight, they have to give the woman back, and they have to pay a penalty." And the last line, "So spoke Atreus' son, Agamemnon, and the other Achaeans applauded him." And thus ends book 3.